this is JamesRichardPunks.com.
And by his side, as usual, this is Couch Potato Mike. How the heck are you doing this week?
I'm pretty good. I noticed you're much better than the last episode.
Yes. Last time, I felt like I was at death's door. I was completely miserable, but now I'm feeling much better.
Yeah. When editing last week's episode, the intro went something like this. Hi, this is James from Survival Punk.
And this is...
this is Deathbed Mike. Yeah, I actually tried to edit out some of your coughs and then got tired of it and was like, ah, fudge, ramekins.
You don't edit out my damn coughs.
I did. I went through and edited out a bunch and...
Then I'm going to cough twice as much now.
Well, no.
Yeah?
Then I would just record the podcast without you.
You will not. I will stab your computer.
Ah. So I'm now, the tiny house is moving along. There is, the water heater was put up on its water heater platform, which
Sweet.
Looks terrible. So I'm going to have to like build a door and box it in or something, oh. But it's off the floor. The ceiling has the first coat of paint over the kitchen. The loft is painted and stained.
Really?
Actually, I think. Besides a little trim work, the loft is done. I just need to get the mattress and put it up there and put the cover plate over the power outlet up there, and loft is done.
So you stained your ladder, too.
Yes, the ladder. I built and stained the ladder. It looks that was pretty good.
That was a sexy-looking ladder.
I know. So I'm going to go out tomorrow and paint the underside of the loft. So the underside of the loft is going to be painted white to make that space feel bigger. And then... I think I'm going to stop and get the bright, glossy red paint that I'm going to paint the kitchen with.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I'm going to do white cabinets and red walls in the kitchen.
Ugh.
And then I'm still trying to find the flooring for it. The kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the house, I'm going to use the that paper bag DIY flooring method that I've seen go around.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that, too. We actually thought about it at one point.
Yeah. I mean, it looks good. It looks super easy. It's cheap. So, I'm going to go with that. So
you just described everything in a good date. Cheap and easy.
Cheap and easy.
Now, you have a giveaway that you wanted to announce, didn't you?
Thanks for that. I'm going to put out something. I may put out a separate post tomorrow on the giveaway. You know what? I'm going to do an all podcast giveaway.
Really?
Yes, this contest will be completely for the podcast listeners. For the couple hundred of you guys that are diehard listeners, thanks a lot. So I have a size 40 SOE, that's Special Operations Equipment, Cobra Riggers belt with the D-ring attachment on it. It doesn't fit me no more. So I had to buy a new one. Look at that pretty belt.
Yeah, that's a pretty belt.
For a size 36, because the Cobra Rigger belts, they have a Cobra head belt buckle and Velcro to attach them. I'm sure if you want to win it, you probably know what it is. And that's the way it makes the best ones out there. They don't have a lot of leeway in smaller sizes.
Mm.
So if you wear a size 40 and you lose weight, there's only so much Velcro left to work. So it starts getting where you can't tighten it up enough, and your pants get loose. You can't, not like a normal belt, you can't just poke a new hole in it. I mean, I guess if you wanted to get fancy, you could try stitching on more Velcro, but it doesn't work. So I just went and bought a new size 36 belt. So if you're size 40 to possibly a 38, it's not going to be that tight. So if you carry a pistol inside the waistband, a size... And you wear a size 38, a size 40 belt should work because the extra, you know, space the gun's going to take up.
Hmm.
And if you're up to probably a 42, it should probably fit too because it's a little easy to go out a couple sizes. So if you want to get this red and black size 40 SOE Cobra Riggers belt, be the first person to email james@survivalpunk.com. with your address, and I'll put it in the mail and send it out to you.
Well, that sounds pretty spiffy.
Yep.
That is mighty neighborly.
Only to the, I may not even write it down in the show notes.
You shouldn't. Don't write that in the show notes. Yeah, this is just for our loyal listeners.
Yeah. So if you listen, I may mention in the show notes there is a contest, but I won't tell them how to win it.
Nope.
They You've got to listen. At the 5-minute mark or whatever, and you can win a belt.
Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome, 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 awesome.
Love giving away stuff. Mm-hmm. Plus, I'm actually in the giving spirit because not only is it Christmas, but I'm moving and don't want to take a bunch of shit. When you're a prepper and survivalist, moving and packing is hell.
I can imagine.
Yeah, I haven't even touched my canned food yet.
Oh, good God.
Yeah, the cases of MREs are not packed up, which is nice because one of them is my end table, so I may move that and not make an end table anymore. I've got... Anyway, enough about the moving. We may talk about the move when I do move. But what do we got coming up today?
Well, coming up on the show today, we're going to be talking about 25, yes, you heard me right, 25 winter bug out essentials. 6 reasons that your fear of bacteria is completely stupid. We're going to be reviewing the Fox Outfitters hammock. Talking about Coke is going to be launching a double-priced milk beverage. That sounds fascinating. Delightful. That grabbed your eyes and almost reached off the computer screen and forced my hand to write this one down. As well as our permaculture minute, our wild edible of the week, and a special offer to bring back Mike's paleo report. But first, let's start with our good friends over at jmbullion.com.
Yes. If you are looking to increase your investment portfolio by bringing in some gold and silver, which I highly recommend you should do, JM Bullion is the best place online to get that. You get the best pricing, free shipping, deal with a good family-owned company, and just get the best prices on it. So, and you're going to need some silver and stuff in your portfolio. Why not get it from them?
And as we've been saying for weeks now is the time to be buying silver.
Oh, yeah. The price is still amazing.
Yeah.
So get it now.
It'll bounce back. Trust me on that. It will bounce back, and you can make yourself a pretty penny that way.
Yep.
So find that banner on the right-hand side over at survivalpunk.com that says JM Bullion. Click there and start making the wisest investments you ever will. And while you're over in that banner on the right-hand side of survivalpunk.com, find the little space marked Mai Tai's Exotic Asian Coffee if you really want a great way to wake up in the morning.
If you want the best coffee with a good cause, grown in Thailand, which apparently is a great reason to be growing coffee in, look no further than Mai Tai Coffee.
Yeah, the proceeds from what you spend on this delicious coffee go to help the local indigenous people there.
Yeah, the proceeds, Mai Tai helps out the Thailand people there in a multitude of ways. The proceeds go to help a organization that helps orphans, children get food, education, and medical. So, I mean, unless you hate Thailand kids, then why not buy the best quality coffee? And the workers that work the coffee trees get paid a fair wage for their efforts and not, you know, pennies.
So those are some great reasons. And plus, I mean, who doesn't love a good cup of coffee? And you'll get more than a good cup. You will get a great cup of coffee from those people.
Probably the best coffee I've ever had. Spice coffee was amazing.
Yeah, because you're kind of a coffee snob.
I am kind of a coffee snob.
So find that banner, Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee. And now let's just jump right into our first news story, a 25 winter bug out essentials.
Absolutely. Usually we try to limit the number of these lists, but we're feeling a little frisky today.
Yeah, a little bit frisky, he says. All right.
Let's scroll to the... I hate when lists... Let's scroll to the bottom. Oh. We're going to start with number 25.
Okay, number 25, wool pants. Protect your legs from the winter cold with Winter Survival Wool Pants, courtesy of American Preppers Network. There is no better option for pants than wool in both the fall and winter environment. Wool is warm, durable, lasts a long time, and is resistant to flame, so you can be close to the campfire. The only downside to wool is that it is very easy to get dirty, but that's a small sacrifice to make for pants that will keep you both dry and warm.
Yeah, so a good place to find wool pants is actually hit up like your local thrift stores, because they usually have like a a lot of high-end trousers are made of wool, and you can get it for like a couple bucks a piece.
Oh, absolutely.
Number 24, tender. Of course. Fire is essential for a survival and winter bug out. Searching tree wells for dead wood is a tender. For dead wood and tinder is all fine and good. But even then, much of what you collect will have soaked up at least some of the condensation. You need to pack tinder that burns extra hot, extra long to compensate for this. The most effective tinder we've used include cotton balls soaked in petroleum jelly. That's my second favorite, actually. Small fire starter bricks, strike a fire tinder, and magnesium shavings. Coconut oil works amazing, as does coconut lube.
Coconut worked even better than the oil.
Coconut worked better than everything. Coconut worked better than anything else I've tested ever.
That is awesome.
Yes.
Number 23, a tent. To survive a winter bug out, you will need a tent for shelter. A true winter shelter should have wider diameter poles for stability in wind and snow, lots of vents to limit condensation, and numerous loops on the rainfly for anchoring guidelines in storms. Also, consider the external pole clips make for a faster setup in harsh weather than sleeves or internal poles. Size 2 travelers need at least 30 square feet of interior space to fit bulky winter gear, plus vestibules big enough for two packs. Pile into a new tent with all of your gear to make sure it fits. Claustrophobic? If living space matters more than low weight, a 3-person tent provides ample room for just two plus winter gear.
I even use my hammock in the winter, so I'm crazy. Number 22, winter bug out socks. Like these ones I'm wearing. During the winter, socks are an even more important part of your bag. You can use them on your feet, of course, but they can double as gloves, mittens, or towels in a pinch. And you can get water out of them. I like Cody Lundin. Just squeeze them out.
He was squeezing them straight into his mouth in that episode.
Keep at least a couple of warm pairs in your bag.
Number 21, snow gaiters. Survive the cold winter by keeping the ice and snow from your feet and legs with gaiters. Dating back to at least the 18th century, gaiters provide a bridge of protection between the wearer's shoe and their legs. They are an often overlooked piece of outdoor clothing, but benefit the wearer in a number of ways.
Number 20, cold weather sleeping bag, because you need rest when you bug out. Seal the warmth and survive the cold in a sleeping bag. In order to get the painful part over first, let's talk about your sleep system. This is probably more essential than any other piece of gear of kit in your bag. Now, I'm no expert on sleeping bags, but I do know the biggest difference in price between most bags is weight. You will probably be able to find a bag rated to below freezing for around $100. What you'll have a hard time finding is one that weighs below 5 pounds. That's true. My winter sleeping loadout is probably 10 pounds a bag.
Mm-hmm.
I have the military sleep system, which is two sleeping bags nested together with a Gore-Tex bivy bag surrounding it so the airflow doesn't get through.
Number 19, winter bug out sled. Survive the winter bug out with a little help from your sled. The last item on the list might leave some a little baffled, but the truth is, it comes incredibly handy for hauling large amounts of gear, firewood, or whatever else you pick up along the way. Now, by sled, winter sled, I'm not talking about a giant wooden thing children use at Christmas time.
Number 18. Fight the cold when you bug out. Ski mask. Also good for robbing convenience stores. Ski mask ensure your survival while shielding your face from the cold.
I actually own 2 ski masks myself.
Nice. I do not own any. I choose this mask because you can wear it in 3 ways. Cover the neck, cover the face, or cover your whole head. It's high quality and comfortable, so it's the mask I recommend for my friends.
Number 18.
17.
Oh, I'm sorry. Number 17. Winter bug out essential tool. Shovel. Dig yourself out of the snow to survival with a shovel. Finally, always include a small shovel in your bag. If you prefer a larger one, just keep it in the trunk of your car. Having a small shovel means you'll be able to shovel through snow, but even if you get caught in a storm, it will help with the setting up of shelter.
Number 16. Polyethylene foam lets you bug out in comfort. Survive the ice and snow by using polyethylene foam as padding. This is something that I've used to pack things and comes in large rolls. Lightweight, and it's a great insulation to use under your bivy sack or when sitting down in the cold. I've added 6 foot.
I folded 6 foot long
pieces. 6 foot long pieces for each adult family member and a 5 foot long piece for each of the children in half, then rolled them tightly, securing them with 2 rubber bands. I have them wedged under the top flap of the bug out. You can do that. I used closed cell mats myself. I have a bridge rest. Works great.
Number 15, bug out but know where you are. Navigation and maps. Everyone says you have to have maps of your area and your gear. That's true, but how much time did you spend deciding exactly what kind of maps to take? If you just stuck a state road map in your bug out bag, then you should reconsider and take 3 types of maps that should be in your survival gear.
It's an easily overlooked one. Mm-hmm. Retain your body heat as you bug out. Mylar blankets. Survive extreme cold by adding a Mylar blanket to your kit. These high-tech, lightweight blankets can be a lifesaver. They help your body retain its heat. They take up very little space, and though they are really hard to refold, I basically call them expendable. You use them once and then throw them away. It's impossible to ever pack them back. They take up very little space. They are inexpensive, easy enough to have a few on hand. These would help in a car situation as well. I actually carry a few of these tucked in my spare because I don't want to get caught in the cold without them.
Number 13, see in the dark, bug out lighting and batteries. Winter nights are long, so make sure your headlamp and flashlight batteries are new or fully charged before an excursion, and always take extras. Lithium batteries perform well in cold weather, but they can overpower some devices like headlamps. Check out your product's manual for compatibility. Alkaline batteries are inexpensive and should work in any other device, but they drain at a faster rate. Tip, cold temperatures decrease battery life. Store your batteries and battery-operated devices inside your sleeping bag to keep them warm.
Number 12, a jacket. Keep the heat in your core with an Arctic jacket. Arcteryx stuffed its expedition-grade Ceres with a lofty 850 field down and cleverly substituted synthetic insulation in key moisture-prone areas like the cuffs and collar and around zippers. It's a puffy that's ready for the elements and still holds its loft even after hundreds of days, cramming it into a pack. Add to that water-resistant windstopper fabric to ward off slop, and this is the coat you want for crawling in and out of snow cave. I have a down coat, a little small cheapie that I use, probably $40. It's super warm and it'll pack down into its pocket. You can fold the whole coat in the pocket. I love it.
Pretty cool. Number 11, stay hydrated on your bug out. Insulated water bottles. Let's see. Tip, you may not feel thirsty in cold weather, but staying hydrated is just as important in winter as it is in summer. Drink water, warm or cold, hot tea or hot chocolate. The latter also provides high-calorie fuel for your outdoor adventure.
Number 10, headgear. Not Bear Grylls, though, I'm sorry. For those of you who may not be as familiar with winter survival, you may not realize that a very large percentage of your body heat escapes through your noggin. Something as simple as having a warm hat will also keep your core body temperature up. Many people might make the mistake of thinking that they can get by with something as simple as a stocking hat or beanie. This would be fine if you were sure that it wouldn't snow, but you can never be sure of that. What we prefer is a specially designed waterproof hat that has a brim to keep the snow off our faces and necks. The hats that we purchase also have fleece ear coverings and drawstrings. I prefer the combination of a wool beanie cap with a hood on my jacket. That's what works for me.
Bug out visibility, snow goggles, and glasses. Snow goggles ensure your survival in winter by keeping the cold from burning your eyes. Goggles and glasses always protect your eyes from the sun and wind. There are different lens tints for various weather conditions.
Number 8, warm gloves. Winter outdoor gloves help you survive the cold by protecting your hands and fingers. Keep your hands warm and useful. As far as gloves go, we like the Glacier gloves for their sheer cold and moisture repelling power, and the Dots gloves with their ability to operate your cell phone touchscreen, your mobile phone, while your fingers stay encased in
cotton.
Mobile phone. If you're not looking to fork over $50 or $30 when you're perfectly functional gloves, though, you can throw together some rice-powered microwavable mittens warmers on. My phone actually will work with normal gloves, so I just use warm Thinsulate gloves.
That's awesome. Number 7, winter bug out essentials, food. 3-day supply of food minimum. I carry more to be determined by the size and age of the family and personal needs. Suggested items, MREs, meals ready to eat, or LRPs, long-range patrol rations. Canned food, meats, tuna, sardines, fruits, vegetables, chili, etc. I avoid these as too heavy.
Sure they are, buddy. Now, how much does your belly weigh?
Hard candy, dried fruits, granola bars or power bars, fruit bars or fruit roll-ups, Mountain House or similar freeze-dried dehydrated foods, jerky or pemmican, home-dried fruits, beans or pasta. I think you'd probably disagree with a couple of those.
Yeah. Number 6. Stay warm on your bug-out fleece liner. A fleece liner is a great addition to your survival sleeping bags. The idea behind these liners is that you can use them inside your existing bag to add around 10 degrees to your bag's temperature rating. I think it's a brilliant idea for those that already have a reasonable bag and just need a couple extra degrees to feel comfortable during the cold weather. If anyone has some first-hand experience using these sort, please chime in the comments.
Number 5, winter bug out essentials, first aid kit. Do not bug out in winter without a first aid kit. First aid kits are one of those preparedness items that people often neglect. Unfortunately, they don't seem to get the same attention that things like survival knives, guns, and bug out bags get. But when you think about it, a first aid kit is something that it's probably going to get more use than any other items in your survival case.
I put a pretty big emphasis on the first aid kit. And I don't include things in my bug out bag like guns and weapons because it should be on my person anyway.
Yeah, either in a holster or slapped over your shoulder.
Yeah.
Like a Continental soldier.
Number 4, bug out but stay connected, communication devices. Connect to the world and survive even when you have bugged out. You'll most likely have no cell phone coverage in the backcountry. Two-way radios allow you to stay connected to members in your group who travel at different speeds. They are, however, limited to line-of-sight coverage. Satellite messengers and phones offer an option to communicate with folks at home.
Number 3, winter bug-out boots. These boots are made for surviving the cold weather. But not just any pair of boots. You need a durable pair of boots that will hold up exceptionally well in fall and winter. One option is snow boots, but since those only work during the winter, perhaps a better option would be a good pair of mud boots. Mud boots are high, some can even reach your knees. They hold up well in both winter and muddy terrain, are lightweight, and also easy to slip on and off. Granted, you might not be able to fit a pair of boots into your survival/bug-out bag, but at least you can in your car.
I actually need some winter-ready boots, which I have too many shoes and boots as it is, but I need to... What I was trying to look was an insert to make my either hiking boots or my combat boots winter-ready. So, like, maybe a bootie to go inside the boot to add, like, winter warmth to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking for those. Number 2, the bivy sack. With a bivy sack, you can keep the cold out and survive a winter bug out. Bivy sacks are usually a slip over for your sleeping bag.
Moving along, we're taking too long.
And number 1, hand axe. A good hatchet with a steel handle that is melded perfectly into the blade is a time saver and a lifesaver. Hand saws and wire saws are mostly a waste of energy.
And I disagree. I'm still a fan of the knife and saw combo. I've seen people take trees down so much faster with a saw compared to a hand axe.
Oh, really?
So, I'm going to disagree. Maybe a big buck saw or even some of the small saws I think are pretty good.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to lash out at something on that list. And that'll do it for the 25 Winter Bug Out Essentials. Moving right into our next news story. This comes from the very talented writers over at Cracked.com, one of my favorite sites. This is the
only site you visit.
It is not the only site I visit.
You've never read a news story not from Cracked.
That is not true. I read an article on SurvivalPunk.com one time.
Yeah?
Yeah, you mentioned me at the end of it, so I kind of had to. Oh. All right. The 6 objective reasons why your fear of bacteria is irrational. Number 6. We're already covered in stuff, and it might be good for us. But I don't want bacteria living and crawling on my skin. I'm very important, you scream into the sky while angrily punching the air. Well, you might want to conserve your air punching arm strength, because there's already a lot of bacteria on you all the time, and the majority of it hasn't even been classified. Most importantly, we don't know what all the different types might be capable of. What if bacteria is meant to be a part of us? Well, that was answered by a group of MIT microbiologists who used bacteria to clean themselves. One of the dudes saw a horse go sniffing around in the dirt and even roll in a certain spot. While most of the world will just giggle and nickname it stupid flop horse, we wondered if maybe it had some primitive ability to smell bacteria and that feeds on the ammonia that is in sweat. And he was right. He developed a culture called AO+ and started misting himself with it, and he hasn't showered in over 12 years. By just rinsing the body with water every couple of days and then misting himself, the culture of bacteria has protected him from smelling like a filthy troglodyte. It eats his sweat, his skin is softer, the natural oils return. Acne is no longer a concern, and the bacteria was the wonder cure. Think of how much time you waste showering, going to the store and buying soap and shampoo, when you could just go roll in some dirt and take it easy. Stupid flop horse. Number 5. Do you want to read number 5?
Sure. We are already disgusting anyway. You are disgusting. We can't always see it, but we know you're gross. You have to blow your nose and feces coming out of your body. You're constantly going into a private room and pouring liquid out of your funky town region. If you're lucky, you then rub that region on someone else's for pleasure. There are giant companies that got rich by developing the best stick and cotton combo just to dig all the gross stuff out of your ears. Does it show up on your face? You massage their filthy insides out of your skin. Dead matter is constantly growing out of your fingers and toes. You have to trim it off every couple weeks. You might polish or paint, but we know what it is. It's just more grossness growing on you, in you, and out of you. Number 4.
There's way more of it around you than you realize. The biomass of bacteria is larger than all the plants and animals on the planet. We try to have it removed from the premises of our bodies. We shower and rinse ourselves with chemicals, rub our hands in antibacterial gel, as if that bacteria might ruin an otherwise pristine surface. But no surface is devoid of bacteria. It's nearly impossible. Doing so would be like trying to remove all the stars from the universe or all the sex references from Prince's song library. According to the link above, there are approximately 50 million bacteria organisms in a single gram of typical surface soil. A gram of Earth. Your body is much bigger than a gram, no matter how much you work out. Imagine how many of them must be on us all the time. We are walking games of organic Sim City, except in our case, the pollution comes in the form of tiny, tiny poop. No one ever really knows how many bacterial organisms there are. The best approximation scientists can give is 5 million, trillion, trillion, or 5 nonillion. If you trust that's a word I'm not making up. 5 million trillion trillion is a little kid number. They're consistently expanding, and nothing you can do is going to get rid of them. This is their planet. We happen to be standing on it. We should all immediately apologize to the bacteria for invading their domain. Number 3.
Our methods for eradicating it are horrible. In an attempt to eradicate bacteria, someone's real job is to lather up an animal to see if it lives. Well, this sample Well, this sample stripped away not only the fur, but also the skin from this bunny. Then, after modifying and retrying several of those, we hopefully land on, sounds like this sample is ready for a sexy commercial showing some model tossing her hair around. We found the right chemical mixture. Almost all current shampoos have sodium lauryl sulfate. Which, by the way, is why I have not used shampoo in several years. Terrible stuff. Which strips away all the bacteria and has the added side effect of drying out your hair. Then, we have to condition it in hopes of getting it somewhere near its natural, somewhat oily state. Instead of this delicate mixture of chemical rubbing on our heads, why not just use something completely natural that achieves the desired goal? And we could save a few bunnies in the process. If you're into that sort of thing, I mean, totally understand that some people just freaking hate bunnies. Yosemite Sam comes to mind.
Number two. Nature wants you covered in it immediately. Allergies are way up in Western culture. Kids have nut allergies on a level that no one completely understands. Some scientists believe it has to do with the increased number of C-section births, which are much more sterile than vaginal births. I realize how crazy that sounds, but it makes sense when you hear the scientific explanation. When the baby doesn't travel through the vagina, it misses out on being close with a significant batch of vaginal microbes. It's like the child is rinsed in a factory-issued undercarriage sealant. They normally charge a lot extra for that, but mom does it for free. Thanks, mom. Bifidobacteria make their way into an infant's intestines and start to build a defense against infection and inflammation. It does this with the help of breast milk, which is a natural probiotic. Those are all the rage now, and get the beneficial microbes in the body, and your mom was pumping them into you right from the beginning. Some of those microbes made their way from her colon to her breast milk, into your mouth, and into your intestines, because nature wants you to have the right bacteria in your system. Because nature is exactly as disgusting as it is helpful. Imagine if your mom had doused her breast milk in antibacterial solution, and if people were willing to go so far as to swab their newborns with vaginal bacteria, or let dogs lick them and have play in sandboxes and dig their hands in all kinds of foreign bacterial culture, perhaps immunities would develop. Or maybe you'd have the unhealthiest child ever. But the longer we wait, the worse the peanut economy gets. Do you really want to see Mr. Peanut go broke? He already has a cane, you heartless masochist. How bad do you want him to get?
He's a legume. I want him to die.
Oh, God. Leave him alone.
Number one. The bacteria inside you might define you or change you. Interesting. I'm glad I got this one because I'm very big on gut biome. If your internal microbiome is thrown off balance, it could be deadly. Everyone is afraid of E. coli because it's like a bad drunk at a party that starts fighting everyone and giving them diarrhea. If you just don't give it any bad meat, it lives inside you like a polite citizen. But there are even scarier varieties of bacteria inside of you than E. coli. Clostridium difficile, if left unchecked, will proliferate and take over your system and straight up murder you, which is not very nice. But we don't have to be scared of these. We're figuring out how to manage them. Sometimes, to set the cultures back to healthy levels, doctors will insert someone else's feces into your digestive tract.
I've actually heard of that.
Yeah, fecal transplant.
Mm-hmm.
And that culture will balance out the C. diff and reset your levels like resetting a video game. Feel free to interpret that as a metaphor on the current state of video game industry. Really. So, who do you get the poop from? In certain situations, the feces from a slim person, which, on a side note, the gut bacteria profile of every fit, skinny person is similar and opposite, different from overweight people. And when you lose weight, your gut bacteria changes to be similar to that of a skinny person. So you cannot be overweight and have a gut bacteria akin to what a skinny fit person has.
Hmm.
In certain situations, the feces of a slim person inserted into a heavier person has changed the heavier person's metabolism, thus making them lose weight. Sick people have become healthy people. Left-handed people have become wrong-handed people. That last one is unproven, but it could have happened in my mind. I'm working up to a poop-related superpowers, and you have to start small.
Alrighty then. Now it is time for our main topic of the day, survival guns.
Yes. And we're at the halfway mark. Today, boys and girls, the episode may run long.
Oh, yeah, that really shocked people if we did a long episode.
I was surprised to see that we had an episode come out at, I think, under an hour or at an hour.
And it was like, just under an hour.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that's weird. It was like
54 minutes, I think.
So this morning, I wrote an article about the best way to protect your Second Amendment right. And it was a quote that I came up with. You can quote me on this.
Oh, boy.
The best way to protect your Second Amendment rights, and your buddy Todd will love this if he listens, the best way to protect your Second Amendment rights is to teach a liberal how to shoot guns.
Okay.
By removing the fear, the uncertainty, the doubt, the not understanding of guns, and instilling in a liberal the joy of the art of shooting, you have made someone that will fight for death for that right.
Hmm.
And it's not by arguing with them, and it's not by like bashing them over the head with facts on, you know, the FBI fact that more people are killed every year with a hammer than a handgun. Okay. Well, once you start throwing these facts at them, they're just going to close up and they're going to argue with you.
Oh, yeah.
Because guns scare them. They don't make them feel safe. So you've got to sell them on firearms with, you know, the fun of shooting guns. It's a tool. You just take the mysticism out of it.
I've never met anybody that shot a gun for the first time and didn't like it.
Yes. Yes. Once you get someone to shoot, it's just fun. It's just plain fun.
And it's funny. It gives you the rush of having that kind of power in your hands.
Yes. And one of the side effects for me was the first time I shot, you remember, I shot in your backyard, I sucked. I was terrible. I was rubbish at it. And I hate being crap at things.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stand it. So, you know, I didn't say, well, I'm no good at this. I'm going to have to give up. I was like, I got to learn how to shoot.
Yep.
That was a challenge to me. So that took me down the rabbit hole just wanting to get better. But today the real focus is going to be on sort of building your survival gun arsenal. And I tend to, excuse me.
He tends to drink Coke Zero a lot.
Unfortunately, I do. I may or may not edit that out. I tend to sort of, on building my gun battery, I took a little left turns here and there. But my basic premise was I wanted a handgun for self-defense to carry when I got my concealed carry permit.
Right.
I wanted a 22 long rifle for hunting and target practice, because when 22 ammo is available, shooting it is very affordable.
Oh, yeah.
And fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you really don't even need ear protection shooting a 22.
No.
So, and then I wanted a battle rifle, an assault rifle,
AR-15.
And, well, the choice, I mean, there's a lot of things to choose from, price-wise, whatever you want, whatever you think. So an AK, AK-47 or an AK-74 would be a viable choice. That's what Gabriel went with. Hit with the AK-47.
When you absolutely positively got to kill every last motherfucker in the room except no substitute.
I don't care for the look of the AK-47.
Oh, I like it.
I mean,
it's got that retro Cold War look to it.
And I just don't like that. I don't know. So, I mean, it's a viable caliber. It is a good weapon. Price-wise, it's not bad. I mean, I paid under $1,000 for my left-handed AR-15 from Stag Arms.
Oh, God, you confounded Todd with that.
Yeah.
All he can do is, bitch, everything's on the wrong side of the fucking gun.
Yeah. You know, trained military guy, used to the standard, you know, M4 configuration, and then mine being modified for a left-hand shooter, the injection ports on the left-hand side, the safeties on, like, the right-hand side, like, nothing made sense to him. He was just like, oh, what?
God. Yeah, so. he might as well have been staring into the human brain at that thing. It irritated him so badly. Right. Everything was backwards on it.
But he did not have any trouble shooting it.
Nope.
So easy as pie, Monet. So yeah, an assault rifle, for lack of a better term. So that's them. Oh, and then a shotgun. For self-protection.
Oh, absolutely.
I went with I chose a lot of the proven guns in that category. I actually just added a high-powered hunting rifle, which is Mossberg. Forget the model number. It's a 30-06.
And it's funny, the list you just made actually conforms really well with something a former guest of ours said on the show. Glenn Tate.
Yeah. And actually we made a couple with a lot of the same choices. So for my handgun, I originally bought, like, my first handgun ever was a Smith & Wesson Sigma S40VE model. Which I've shot with you before, the old black and silver gun that I had.
Mm-hmm.
It was 40 caliber, which, I mean, at first I really wanted something I thought was more powerful, which now I've set it on the 9. The couple years that I owned the Sigma S40V, I had a lot of jams out of it.
Really?
Yeah, just failure to feed, just annoying. It wasn't super reliable, and that's, for a carry weapon, that's unacceptable. If I pull the trigger, I want it to go bang.
No.
You do not want to carry a weapon. If someone's coming after you, they're trying to kill you, you pull the trigger, click. You've got a round stuck in the chamber.
Yeah.
I mean, you should train to, you know, get rid of that malfunction. You know, tap, rack it, mm-hmm. You know, reshoot. But that's still time. That's,
yeah, when it really boils down to it, you shouldn't have to train to get rid of that. I mean, it's a good skill to have,
yes. But
you want a weapon that's going to be a lot more reliable than that.
So finally, I gave in through some urgings of some friends of mine, like the Zombie Squad and whatnot, and I finally got a Glock, which I was pretty anti-Glock. I thought they were ugly. I thought they were stupid. I didn't think they deserved all the hype. I've owned my Glock 19 that I bought from a police officer friend of mine. Funny story. I'm not going to name him just in case this is a violation of protocol or something, but you know who you are if you listen. He had a spare Glock 19 that just got really bright.
It did.
He had a spare Glock 19 that was his girlfriend's. They had shot it like once or twice or something, and I guess she didn't care for it. So he was like, I'll sell it to you for a good price, like maybe $400 or something for the Glock, the case, two spare magazines, and the cleaning kit for it.
Not bad.
It was either $400 or $500, $450, somewhere in that range. It was a good enough price that definitely for a friend, I was like, yeah, I'll buy this. Like, it was a good price. I knew it was a friend. So I bought it from him in the parking lot of the police precinct that he worked at while he was in uniform. The weapon was in his cruiser. So I parked. He went and opened up the door of his cruiser, handed me this bag with the Glock in it.
Oh, my God.
And I handed him a wad full of cash in the parking lot. And I'm like, yes, this is awesome.
Now you and your Irish brother go and wreak havoc on the evil of this world.
Yeah. So good times. I've had the Glock for couple years, Mm-hmm. Probably three, maybe.
Yeah.
Three, four. I don't know.
About that.
A couple years. Never had a jam in it. Never. Not a single jam. Put hundreds, thousands of rounds through it.
Really? Not one jam ever?
Not one jam. And I'm lazy, and I don't clean it.
Oh, yeah. Todd zinged you on the maintenance of your weaponry.
Yeah, I
like, whoa, that's supposed to be silver in there. Yours is black.
Yeah. Yeah. I use it. Yeah, I use it, and I don't really clean it that much. Oh, and it works. So, yeah, it's probably a topic we should talk about other times, gun maintenance. Maybe I should bring in a guest star for that, because God knows I don't clean my guns very well.
Yeah.
When I do, I use Frog Lube, though, which is what I recommend. So that's the Glock. Just in case you're wondering, in case there's like comments in the feed, I use a Crossbreed Super Tuck holster. Todd was impressed by that. He liked that. It's a really comfortable holster. You can wear it with a shirt and tuck into it, which is amazing. And even with like tight fitted shirts, it conceals so well you still can't see it.
Really?
So I love it. I'm kind of looking to get an outside the waistband holster for winter / wearing around the farm. But for everything else, the Crossbreed Super Tuck. Moving along to the .22 rimfire rifle. I just went with the standard Ruger 10/22. It works great. It's lightweight, reliable. I need a new magazine for it. So that's a topic that we didn't talk about, which was storing extra magazines, because magazines do fail. They have springs in them. Springs can fail over, repeated loadings and usage of them.
Right.
Which is why, years ago I did an article on whether you should store your magazines loaded versus unloaded. Huge debate in the survival world. My conclusion was, if you're storing your magazines, go ahead and store them loaded. That's not even an issue. It's not the spring being compressed that weakens it. It's being compressed and then uncompressed repeatedly. So if you only have one magazine, mm-hmm, and you're using it to train with, you're wrong. It's going to fail on you.
Yeah.
The Ruger magazine, which is a tubular magazine, it's sketchy now.
And you know something, if I might throw in a little piece of advice here? Mm-hmm. So my advice for this is, whatever your weapon is, store your magazines loaded. Always keep extra magazines. And if you're that worried about it, just keep an extra magazine and never load the dang thing. Just keep it in case of an emergency. Just keep it in there with the others.
Yeah. I think right now I have half my magazines loaded and half of them unloaded.
Mm-hmm. That way it's not putting any excess pressure on the springs.
Yeah. And then, when I shoot, I alternate them.
There.
I'll shoot the loaded ones, and then I'll load the unloaded ones and store them. And then next time I go shoot, I'll alternate them.
Yep, you got to take care of your clip.
Yeah. And everybody just comes.
I love doing that, dude.
So, yeah, I mean, I went with the Ruger 10/22. It's sort of the standard. You can go with the Savage 22 model. There's lots of people. I got Ruger 10/22 in Woodstock. I'm thinking about trading with my stepdad, because he has a Ruger 10/22 in synthetic stock, black. They'll actually match the rest of my guns, because everything else I have is black, plastic, synthetic material. So I might do that. Moving along, I already mentioned that I have a Stag Model 2L left-handed AR-15. I chose that because, no surprise, I'm left-handed. And there's reasons to buy both, even if you are left-handed or not. Like, I've not had a problem shooting right-handed ARs, and my right-handed friends have not had any trouble shooting my left-handed AR.
Mm-hmm.
But it's my rifle.
Yep.
And I would rather have a left-handed one that's more convenient to use for me to train with, even though I can still use a right-handed model if I need to for whatever reason. The price was under $1,000 for the rifle and a spare magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Came with the case, instruction manual, gun lock, all that stuff. And I love it. Stag makes a good weapon. The only thing I do not care so much about it, the furniture that came on it, so the front handrail. I don't really care for it. I keep meaning to change it. Just haven't got around to it yet. But as far as functionality, it just works, and it works beautifully. So, you know, there's a lot of good manufacturers out there. I know me and my admin on Survival Punk Facebook page, Grizz, both like the Stag models. Mm-hmm. He's building a 300 Blackout now and, like, painstakingly picking all the components for it, like, down to the barrel and the trigger and, like, every little piece. He milled out the receiver himself, so good for him. It's going to be a long episode.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I chose... and this is another argument that goes around. I bought mine as a 5.56/223. So if you get a rifle calibered in 5.56, it will handle 223 because it's a less powerful cartridge than the 5.56 cartridge, which is what the military uses. If you get one that does not have the 5.55, the 5.56 stamp on it, and only has a 223 stamp on it, do not fire 5.56 out of it. It is not able to shoot up. And that's the way a couple of the calibers that are underpowered. I'm not even going to comment on it. Just don't. And I wouldn't even recommend buying one that's just stamped 223. I just see it as a weakness. It means your rifle is not built to mil spec standards. And if you happen to mistakenly pick up a 5.56, you know, round in a magazine, you could destroy your rifle or at least damage it. I don't think it's worth it. So do not buy only 223 rifles.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of rare, but I have seen a few, and you save some money on them. I think some of the – I can't remember the name. They do make some 223 only rifles that aren't necessarily AR-15s.
Mm-hmm.
They are just 223 sporting rifles. Do not shoot a 5.56 out of that.
Yeah.
So, moving along for the shotgun. So, the last real important one in the list. No big surprise here. I bought a Remington 870 pump action shotgun, the one used by all the police and military around the world.
And my favorite one of your weapons, actually.
Yes. It's fun. If anything, I bought mine from Walmart, and it was under $300. So, somewhere around $260, $270. Not too bad.
No, not too bad at all. And there's nothing more fun than shooting a shotgun.
Yeah. The only thing is, and I eventually I need to do this, I have the longer barrel on it, which adds a considerable amount of weight.
Mm-hmm.
It's long and heavy. So shorter barrel, probably good. But it works. It's accurate. Do not recall any jams out of it off the top of my head.
I don't know. I might be thinking of a different weapon. One time we were shooting some shotgun down in the field, and it jammed.
Yeah. So,
of course, it might have been shooting too powerful a shell out of it, too.
Maybe. I can't remember if Gabriel came out here with his fancy scope shotgun before. I know we've shot it.
I think that was... I don't know if it was that one, but it was... Gabriel was here when that happened.
Okay, so maybe... Maybe it's jammed once since I've owned it, maybe not. But I would say it's still reliable.
Actually, I think it was his gun.
Yeah, I think it was. Admittedly, it was fun to... Gabriel has a shotgun that has a scope on it, which just seems ridiculous, but...
For pinpoint accuracy.
Yeah, it's insane.
On a weapon that does not need pinpoint accuracy.
Yeah. So that's the basic, like, you can get a Mossberg, you can get a used beater shotgun for like $50, which is something I halfway recommend to you. Is just, you can go to a pawn shop and get a shotgun all day long for under $100.
Yeah.
And then you have a shotgun for home protection.
Mm-hmm.
To which I would recommend for you to have a shotgun lock, which no one will sell you a shotgun from a store, pawn store, retail store, without giving you a gun lock, mandatory. You're going to get one. If not, for some weird, wily, crazy reason, I've got several of them laying around.
Well, what if you go in and show them that you already have one?
What?
A gun lock.
They still give you one for free.
Oh, they just give you? Oh, okay.
It comes with the gun purchase. Oh. I've got gun locks with every gun I've ever bought, and somehow I end up with extra ones, because I guess I sold the gun and...
Kept the gun lock?
Kept the gun lock. Whatever. So, yeah, you know, and there's no reason you have to buy all these things brand new. A lot of them are in the secondary market. You can get old versions, because a well-maintained gun will last forever, basically.
Yeah.
So those are my top picks there. A fifth gun, if you wanted to move up to that, would be either a high-powered assault rifle, AR-10, 300 Blackout, something with a little more kick to it, sniper rifle maybe. That kind of gets into a squirrely world that, you know, I buy guns for protection and not so much for assaulting and sniping people to murder them. So maybe that's part of your shit hit the fan plan. It's not mine. But yeah, a fifth pick I would choose would probably be a hunting rifle, a good deer gun. You know, Remington 700 is sort of my preferred go-to. I've got a Mossberg random number in the 30-06 caliber. Nice scope on it.
Thank you for being so specific on that.
My stepdad just gave it to me. He was like, hey, I just got this gun. You need to hunt deer rifle? Here you go.
Yeah, it's always good to have a good, reliable hunting weapon with you.
Yeah. So that, or I whip out the Stag Arms and shoot a deer with that. But anyway, let's move along. Now that we're at the 1 hour mark.
Yep. No, that was a really great segment. Got to admit it. All right, and now it's time for just talking about all that stuff. But now it's time to give a shout out to the good people over at CampingSurvival.com.
CampingSurvival.com for all your bug out and bug in needs. They've got everything you need from bags, fish antibiotics, best prices, possibly free shipping on the fish antibiotics. They have the Life Straw, which I use to drink from your cow peed water down the stream. You also tried some. Your face looks sour, but you're still alive and you have no E. coli in your tummy.
No E. coli.
So it worked. We're alive. Absolutely. From a known stream with cow pee in it.
Yep.
So CampingSurvival.com for all your needs there.
Yep. All right, now it's time for our Gadget Punk Corner, where we're going to be reviewing a new acquisition sent to my co-host here, the Survival Punk himself, by the good people over at Fox Outfitters. It's a Fox Outfitters hammock. And now, you've had a chance to look at this just a little bit.
I would say not so much a review as a first impressions. It came in the mail today. I came out here this evening, so...
Now, what all comes with this hammock?
This hammock is a complete hammock system. This is a single hammock, which usually I prefer the double hammocks just because they're more spacious. I may actually sleep in this tonight, just test it out. It's a single hammock, so that's 10.6 feet long by 5 feet wide, which is still fairly spacious. I mean, normally like my double hammock, my... Trek light is 6 feet wide. So technically I could lay in it completely sideways. This one at 5 foot, you know, I've never done that. I don't even think you would want to lay in a hammock sideways. You could sit in it, which obviously 5 foot is good enough for a seat.
Yeah, I've used them like swings before.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, swings, seats, you know, 15.6 ounces. So just about a pound. Pound 16 ounces.
Yeah, it's
darn
pretty
near light. Pound.
Yeah, pretty lightweight.
And that's with the whole setup. So
comes with
this comes with tree straps and carabiners on it. So and that's really until I get whoopee slings. Sounds great, super fast and easy. Until I get whoopee slings, the tree slap straps and carabiners, my preferred method. My Hennessy hammock does not have slap straps. You've got to tie it. Pain in the ass, hate it. I'm going to replace that with whoopee slings just because that's maybe I don't take it out because it's a pain in the ass tying it up in the tree. And then, you know, you test, so you go sit in the hammock and then you make sure you're sitting for optimal hammock comfort. You've got to get the angles just right. I've woke up in the morning like crunched up in the bottom corner of my hammock because the head end was too high and the foot end was too low, and you just slide down and crumple up in a ball.
Yeah.
Terrible comfort.
Nah. That was an oxymoron.
Yeah, terrible comfort. This thing holds up to 400 pounds. Durable, strong, breathable nylon fabric, triple stitching, extra tough nautical grade ropes. Looking at the carabiners on it, they actually look pretty high quality. They have a good firm click to them. Look like a high grade of metal. So, mm-hmm. It's kind of on the big side. I mean, just pack-wise, it's... I mean, you can't fit it in the palm of your hand by any means, and I wouldn't call it ultra light, but for a good three-season hammock, well, I think it's pretty good. Now, the one I have randomly sent to me was orange and green, so nice colors. The orange could be used as a flag for survival situations.
Oh, absolutely. It's a good eye-catching color, good contrast.
It looks pretty decent quality. I want to say the price was between $40 and $60. Like I said, it was sent to me, so I really don't know. But
now he'll give a probably. Are you going to?
There'll be a full review after I use it. I'm highly considering going home tonight and using that as my sleeping hammock. Because, as the audience knows, I sleep in a hammock every night, which is my trek light. So I may give this one a try and see how I like it.
Alrighty, so stay tuned to SurvivalPunk.com for his full review on that.
Absolutely.
Alright, now it's time for our Nutrition Punk segment. Going to be talking about how Coke is going to be launching a double-priced milk beverage. And when we saw this, we both had the exact same reaction.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah, our brain stopped working. It was like, what the fuck are they talking about? This comes from the great folks at ReadyNutrition.com.
Article written by a Miss Julie Wilson.
Yep. While the rest of the world is beginning to understand that milk isn't as great for our health as it is once thought to be, especially commercially produced milk. Good job, people. Coca-Cola is getting ready to release a premium milk drink called Fairlife. The company says their milk-based drink...
Never a good sign.
Yeah. Which will cost twice the price of pints sold at the grocery store, will be high in protein and calcium and low in sugar. Technically, those sound solid. Mm-hmm. They also claim that the drink will be made from milk produced at 92 sustainable, family-owned farms, according to a report by The Independent. Unlike commercial milk, it's produced in factory farms where cows are treated inhumanely and locked up inside 365 days a year. Coca-Cola claims that their new Fairlife brand will be pursuing the highest standards of milk quality, agricultural sustainability, and animal comfort. Coca-Cola attempts to capitalize on the weak milk market by launching their own nutritious milk-based drink.
Coca-Cola's North American chief, Sandy Douglas, said to a crowd at Morgan Stanley's Global Consumer Conference last week that it's basically the premiumization of milk. We'll charge twice as much for milk. We'll charge twice as much for it as the milk we're used to buying in a jug. Expected to hit stores nationwide next year, Coca-Cola says Fairlife will be lactose-free and taste much better than regular milk because the drink's high-care process and a proprietary milk filtering process. The manufacturers claim Fairlife will have 50% more natural protein and calcium than regular milk, taking milk where it's never been before. A spokesman for the new milk brand said, in response to consumer demand for better, wholesome nutrition from safe, responsible sources, Fairlife, a joint venture between Coca-Cola and the Select Milk Producers Dairy Co-op, is excited to soon be introducing a new, innovative, ultra-filtered milk that offers consumers a dairy option that is sourced from sustainable family farms and provides strong market potential to redefine the category. Coca-Cola plans to be in the dairy business long-term, slowly building the brand and convincing consumers to buy it. We're going to be investing in the milk business for a while to build a brand so it won't rain money in the early couple years. But like
but like simply orange juice. When you do well, it rains money later, added Douglas. Coca-Cola slammed for advertising new milk drink with racy ads.
Aside from skepticism about a sugary, unhealthy soft drink company launching a new, quote, healthy milk-based drink, Coca-Cola is also being slammed for their racy ads promoting Fairlife. Coca-Cola's ads, which feature a series of photos depicting skinny, blonde, and brunette women wearing nothing more than a splash of milk. I like where this is going. Is being called sexist by some. Oh, man up. Captioned,
probably lesbian.
Drink what she's wearing, and better milk looks good on you. The Guardian describes the campaign as a step backwards in terms of objectifying women through advertising. As the images themselves weren't insulting enough, these captions enhance the sexist undertones of a message supposedly intended to focus on health and nutrition, wrote the Independent, Yelva Johannesson, in a critique titled, Do We Really Need Pinup Girls to Sell Us Drinks? The answer is yes. Yes, it is. The Daily Dot called the ad appallingly gross. Already, Coca-Cola's Fairlife is off to a rough start. However, only time will tell the company that's been slammed for its unethical practices worldwide will be able to convince consumers to buy their new milk drink. Their claim that Fairlife is derived from sustainable, healthy practices is laughable, as Coca-Cola's has blatantly showed no regard for such practices in the past. While a few of their latest ventures include low-sugar drinks, everyone knows the company is primarily known for their sugary, unhealthy, carbonated sodas, also known as Death in a Bottle.
I have never heard anybody call Coke Death in a Bottle.
I've never heard them say that either. Regular, and like you said earlier, I do drink Coke Zero. I've tried to quit sodas before. I'll try to quit sodas again. I know that Coke Zero is not the best for me, but damn it, that's my only vice. Give it to me.
Yeah.
I eat healthy, I quit drinking, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs, I drink a Coke Zero a day.
I think you're doing very fine with your Coke Zero.
Yeah, so if that's the worst thing I do, I'll take it until I can quit that too.
You know, one time I was trying to drink one of my dad's Diet Pepsis, because he was drinking Diet Pepsis.
Pepsi is horrible.
Pepsi is my favorite soda on the market. Diet Pepsi is the worst cat piss in a bottle I've ever had. I am sorry. My fat ass tried to fix it by pouring a bunch of sugar into it.
Oh my God.
It ended up disastrous.
Coke Zero is perfect. I don't like any of the other diet drinks, really. I used to drink Diet Mountain Dew, but I haven't drank that in over a year.
Diet Mountain Dew is almost tolerable. Diet Dr. Pepper is probably the most tolerable diet drink for me.
Yeah. I think I've never liked Pepsi, so Diet Pepsi is disgusting.
Of course, I drink the ultimate diet drink every day.
Water.
Yeah, I love water. Always have. I mean, I usually keep a gallon jug of water right by the bed.
Yeah, so let's wrap this episode up. What do we got left?
All right, it's now time for our permaculture minute.
We're only an hour and 8 minutes in. We're good.
All right, so this week's permaculture minute playing card is the Ten of Hearts. Graywater being added to sewage or septic systems only makes these systems less effective. Added to a wicking bed, it becomes a part of an ecosystem. Underground pipes don't freeze or break down in the summer. You clean the water faster by growing a variety of cleansing plants. Underground pipes from gray water source, cleared water now safe to be used for irrigation. Clay-lined gray water catchment is more natural and healthy to plants and other creatures. Wicking beds become habitat for frogs and a source of drinking water for birds, bees, and other beneficial creatures. Without water, your system isn't complete. That's been our Permaculture Minute for the week. There you go. And now it is time for our wild edible of the week, blueberries and huckleberries. Blueberries, many different species, belong to the Vaccinium genus. The genus name, kin to our word vaccination, comes from a Latin word for cows, and probably designates the location of many of the berries' pastures. The way we get from cow to vaccination is during the time that people were dying of smallpox, dairymaids who worked around cows often got a milder pox called cowpox. I don't know why we're talking about that. Let's see. Huckleberry plants grow 2 to 5 feet high in frequent swamps, woodlands, roadsides, and especially burned over ground. The Galeacacia, or something like that, are close kin to the vaccinium, and to the untutored eye look the same. However, having said that, it is the fact that blueberries and huckleberries are genuinely indistinguishable to the foraging eye as well. Let's see. I'm going to list a bunch of recipes. Okay, that has been our Wild Edible of the Week, and now it is time to give a shout-out to the good folks over at WellFoodCo.com.
Well Food Co. The great people at Well Food Co. that make things like the Carne Bar, the Paleo MRE, the delicious and good for the holiday season chocolate bars, created by John Wellborn, his wife, and Rob Wolf. Great food. Oh, my God. They sent me a box of stuff. I may buy a box for Christmas for, you know, friends and family. Who do a discount with the Survival Punk Army, by the way. 15% off, I believe.
Another great reason to join the Survival Punk Army. Another great reason to join the
Survival Punk Army. So, yeah, Well Food Co. Great food.
And if he sounded a little bit distracted, he has grabbed my wife, which is our producer's reading glasses, trying desperately to find...
You have magnifying glass, don't you?
Yeah, you know I've got magnifying glasses.
I think I found it. It's just I can't read it. I'll show you after the show or something.
Here you go.
Oh, it's right there.
Yeah, it's right there. All righty. And let's see. Yeah, you find Well Food Co. on the banner on the right-hand side at survivalpunk.com. And while you're over there, find the little spot marked Freedom Munitions and go there and start shopping for what you're going to need after the collapse.
And we just mentioned a bunch of guns, and for those guns, you'll need ammunition, so there's no better place than Freedom Munitions to get your ammunition.
Yep, right side of the survivalpunk.com page, click on the banner. Alrighty, and if you want your stuff to be up on that banner on the right-hand side of survivalpunk.com, just email James at survivalpunk.com, James at survivalpunk.com. He has great packages he could set up for you. He takes cash, he takes barter, he takes bitcoins, he takes meat, he takes precious metals. Will you take ammunition?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Just contact him, James at survivalpunk.com. And now it is time for Mike's Celebrity Invite of the Week, and this week I'm inviting somebody that has nothing absolutely whatsoever to do with survival.
You're terrible.
Yeah, I know. I'm terrible, but he's also a fellow podcaster out there. His name is Andy McElfrish, former writer for The Tonight Show with Jay Leno for many, many years. He's a very knowledgeable man, and I'm inviting him to come on to either my show or this show, preferably my show, though. So you got an open-ended, open-door invite on to survivalpunk.com or Couch Potato Mike Explains It All, Episode 2, to be coming up very soon.
I actually saw that Jimmy Moore has a new book coming out, so I may shoot him an email. I'd love to get Jimmy back on the show.
Oh, I'd love... Yeah, Jimmy Moore, if you're out there, please come back on the show. Glenn Tate, all of our guests. All righty. Now, if you want to be part of something greater than yourself, if you want to be part of something where you can get major discounts from several different vendors, you should join up with the Survival Punk Army.
Absolutely. You get discounts for over 12 vendors. If you have a company and you'd like to offer a discount, also, once again, see James at SurvivalPunk.com. You get e-books that you can't get anywhere else unless you cough up some money. One of them is even hard to find. You get exclusive content. You get the podcasts in easy-to-download zip files that make life easy for you. Because iTunes screws us over and only put up like 5 episodes at a time or something. So get them all. You got to catch them all.
Yes.
Survival Punk Army needs you.
No. The Survival Punk Army doesn't need you. The Survival Punk Army wants you. I think this has been a pretty good show so far. It's been our longest show this month.
It's been our longest show. Good. Yeah, the energy's definitely returned. I will not spend the whole episode editing it. I will not be yelling at the computer screen. It did. It felt like we had the show chemistry back.
Yeah, and in a couple of weeks, we're going to have the Christmas episode up.
We'll have
the
Christmas episode, and then we'll have a housewarming podcast, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Possibly even we'll do an exclusive you and me tiny house walkthrough for the membership area.
Really? All 45 seconds of it?
Yeah, it won't take longer than that.
It's a tiny house.
Yeah, lots of explaining to do, though.
Alrighty. Well, this is...
My ladder might even hold you.
Yeah, so we've got... Yeah. Oh, you fucking bastard. And on that note, we've got great things on the horizon, so stay tuned for future episodes. Same survival time, same punk channel. For the Survival Punk Podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike.
This is James.
And remember, maintenance your guns, clean them, but if you clean them more than 3 times, you're playing with it.
DIY to survive!